Chapter 8. "You might want to hurry with that," George said as I went through the Blues car, claiming the weapons, ammo, and anything else that looked valuable as a spoil of war. I was still pissed off at the man who had shot Sam, and while I heard him, I didn't really hear him. "I said you might want to hurry," George said again. His voice rose a bit this time, and it was enough to break into my consciousness. "Fred! What?" I yelled back, exasperated, as I looked up from the back seat of the car. George pointed back in the direction of the roadblock, and I sighed. Two more cars were racing toward us, with a third one a little further behind them. Didn't these guys ever give up? A feeling of rage came over me, and I had an out-of-body experience as I watched myself jump onto the trunk of the car. The driver of the first car immediately changed direction to aim for me, with the second car a little further back and in the outside lane. I stood on the back deck of the car and waited as they sped closer. The passenger leaned out the window with a pistol and fired at me several times. I heard one go past and change my aim from the driver to the passenger. One shot through the head and he dropped, limp, to hang from the window. The driver looked over at the passenger. He was close enough to see now, and I shot him once through the front windshield. The driver had already committed to ramming the car I was standing on. Apparently, he'd never been in a car wreck and didn't know how violent they were. And I jumped to the concrete divider as the two cars slammed together, balancing gracefully on the 6-inch ledge. A man leaned out of the back window of the second car as it approached at high speed. He had an automatic rifle, and he began spraying it in my direction. "Get down!" I yelled at the kids who were trying to see what was going on. Then I aimed and fired. It took me two shots, but I blew out the tire closest to me, and the driver swerved slightly to sideswipe the tangled mass of cars. The man in the back was ripped violently from the window, as was the corpse hanging from the earlier wrecked car, in a spray of blood and body parts. I dropped the magazine and slammed in a new one as the car slid to a stop. The third car arrived at the same time, going into a skid as the driver locked up the brakes. It screeched to a stop, and four men burst from it, with two more coming from the second car on the left. I did a somersault as I flipped from the concrete divider, and I landed in a crouch on the asphalt of I-10. I looked back and forth between the groups as I pulled out one of the pistols I had recovered from the earlier car and began firing both weapons. The men on the left were closer, and each of my eyes looked down a set of sights as a pistol locked onto both of them. The first man got a shot off before a round from the gun in my left hand hit him in the chest. The man on the right took two hits before he could get off a round. Both men collapsed. A round went past my head from behind me, and I dove to the side, taking the asphalt impact on my left shoulder. Pain blossomed like the fires of a sunburst as I opened up my earlier wound. I put it aside and rolled to find the four men from the third car firing at me. A piece of asphalt from a near miss tore open my cheek. Then my pistols were in line. Both fired, and two of the men shooting at me dropped. A bullet grazed my ass as I switched targets, but then I fired again, and the two remaining men dropped. Two of the men were still moving feebly, so I climbed to my feet, limped over, and shot each of the men in the head. As I looked at the last man, I came to my senses again. The first thing I noticed was that I was hurt. A lot. From everywhere. The pistols fell from my senseless hands and I stared at my last victim. Psychopath. Yeah, it sure seemed like it. An athletic one, I realized. I had no idea I could do a flip in the air, nor that I'd ever want to. But psychopath, yeah. Pretty much. Some of the men had been obviously dead, but I'd shot them again in the head anyway. After some time, I didn't know how much, George came over to stand next to me. He looked down at the man I was staring at. "You're not waiting for him to get back up, are you?" he asked. "I think he's pretty well and truly dead." "Looks like it," I agreed, not knowing what I was supposed to do next. "You're bleeding," George noted. I looked down. I had a lot of blood on me. I couldn't be sure, but most of it seemed to be mine. except for the spray pattern from when Sam got hit.
Yep.
I've got a first aid kit. Want me to patch some of that up?
Probably be helpful,
I acknowledged.
I'll be right back.
He came back and made me take off my shirt, then cleaned and patched me up the best he could. He was also going to put some antibiotic on my ass, but I figured I could do that myself. It wasn't much more than a scratch, thankfully, and I didn't particularly want to drop my pants in the middle of I-10. He handed me a new shirt.
So what do we do now?
I took Dad's body down the slope so the kids don't have to see it, but I don't have a shovel or anything to bury it with.
We don't have time to bury it, I replied.
His mouth dropped open, so I added, the folks at the roadblock had to hear all the shooting, and sooner or later, they're going to get organized and come find out what happened. If nothing else, they'll come looking to see what they can salvage.
I can help hold them off, he offered. I know how to shoot. Not as well as you, maybe, but I can shoot.
When they come, they're going to come in a big group. We'll need to be gone. I killed these idiots, but if there are enough of them, they're going to win in the end.
So what do we do?
Do you know where Sam's brother lives in Pensacola?
Yeah, he's on Perdido Key. I live there too. He's down the island a ways from me, but I know where to go.
Then that's where we'll head. We can't go back, and I don't know of anywhere else we can go to figure out what we need to do next. See what you can scavenge from the guys I killed while I finish patching myself up, and we'll get going. I walked over to stand behind one of the Blues cars so the kids wouldn't see me with my pants down and put some antibiotic cream on my last bullet wound. With the pain from my other wounds, I barely noticed this one, but I didn't want it to get infected. I had no idea where the nearest functional hospital was, but I doubted I particularly wanted to go there. I was just finishing up when I heard one of the kids.
Dad? Mr. Fred?
The voice asked from the direction of our truck.
Yeah,
George asked, more used to answering questions from his boy. It took me a second to realize the boy also meant me. I didn't know what my name was, but I was pretty sure it wasn't Fred. But then again, nothing anyone had called me felt right.
There's a group of cars coming, Daddy,
the boy said. I could see him now. It was the older one. He was standing on the bed of the truck. George must have put him on lookout duty. That made a lot of good sense. I wish I'd thought of it. I shook my head, trying to clear it. I knew I needed to focus more, but it somehow seemed like part of me was missing. I knew some things, but others were missing. And then I'd do something like kill a bunch of people without even trying. That was the part that freaked me out the most. How could I kill like that and not remember? I filed it away for later and looked down the road. The boy was right. There was a big convoy of cars coming. Unlike the Blues, though, they were being cautious. They probably didn't know what we were doing when we broke through their barricade. They may not have even known there were two groups that ripped through their forces. But they knew a big fight had occurred, and they wanted to make sure they could get out of whatever they got into. In other words, they were smart. I didn't want to take this group on.
We gotta go, George,
I yelled.
Grab what you can.
I pulled my pants up, did a quick search of the car, and hobbled over to the concrete barrier. I gingerly made my way across it and back to the truck. The convoy was still about half a mile away and appeared to be in no hurry to come roaring in on us. They were probably trying to figure out how many of us were left. When they realized there were only a couple of adults, they'd probably charge us. I wanted to be gone before that happened.
Want me to drive so you don't have to sit?
George asked.
No, you stay with the kids in the back, I replied.
One of the things I realized I was missing was a good sense of compassion. While I could recognize, clinically, the kids would probably be scared and need comforting, I also knew I wasn't the person to give it to them. George could sit with them and handle it. When everyone was settled in the back, I started the motor and drove off. I could see the convoy of cars accelerating once we left. They stopped at the battle site and got out of their cars while I drove off at 50 miles an hour. I don't think we left them much of value, but they were welcome to whatever was there as long as they didn't follow after us. They didn't seem to be in any sort of hurry to catch us, so I imagine they'd go back to their barricade once they searched the remaining cars. I was happy to leave both them and the Blues behind. You take what you can get in this fallen world.